really hope we beat their ass today.
And I'm going to tell you what, the tortillas were flying.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast presented by Viva the Matadors. This is the voice of Jeremy Gillen, and this week is going to be a little bit different. It's a bye week, so in the spirit of bye weeks, we've allowed Jacob Harris and Tyler Lucas to take the week off, and that means we have our very own producer, Dylan Smythe, on the pod, live and alive from Colorado, powdery, beautiful, snowy Colorado. Isn't that right, Dylan?
Yeah, snow on the way. We just had, you know, probably a foot of snow in the last 2 days, and I'm going skiing next week. Also, everybody who has to deal with children got a bye week from the podcast. And then there's us.
I'd love to also bring attention to something Dylan and I were talking about pre-pod. Something Dylan very specially was able to do today. Invited to a Halloween party. And what Dylan, was your response? What did you decide to dress up as, and then where did you go to find that?
I had ideas for a Halloween costume, but I never did them. So I went to Walmart and I found a onesie, and it's a hawk. So it has like a little hood for like your head, and it's a hawk, and it has wings. And yeah, I got a hawk onesie.
Wait, is it a hawk or is it an eagle? These are very different things.
I don't know. One of the two. It's a big bird.
Is the head white or brown?
I don't know. I left it in the office because I didn't want to actually wear it, like driving to work. So I left it at work.
Oh my God. Okay. Hide your shame until the party when it's okay. So just kind of a brief introduction of what today is going to be about, or tonight, or whenever you're listening. Dylan and I reached out on Twitter and thought that it'd be a good idea to get people's thoughts, concerns, comments about the program after kind of a demoralizing loss against Kansas. And newsflash, nobody responded with an actual comment or with an actual usable piece of information. But the reality is that even though you guys don't participate in when we reach out to you, you're very participating whenever it just concerns opinions in general. So there's plenty of thoughts. There's plenty of raging out there. There's plenty of everything. So we've kind of combed through a number of different mediums, Facebook, Twitter, on our very own blog site, and picked the best of the best to kind of go over where the disgruntled nature of our fan base is, and, you know, maybe what the reality, as far as Dylan and I see it, is behind that. So all we're going to do tonight is just, or today, tomorrow, whatever, is just going to kind of go through these, see what your concerns are, address them. And if you still have them, then that's not our problem. We're wiping our hands of it. But there's a lot going on out there. And I think right now is the best time just to kind of settle down, honestly. So I guess the best thing, Dylan, is that we just kind of pick our favorite and then talk about it. So we can kind of do that back and forth. Yeah. you want to start us off? And I guess for confidentiality, let's keep names out of it so people don't get people don't get upset.
Okay, so I think an interesting place to start is a question I posed when I posted the last podcast. But if Alan Bowman's healthy, who plays week one? And we had a couple responses with a couple different opinions. And I think you can make an argument either way. But what's your argument?
When Bowman comes back?
So let's assume Bowman gets healthy over the bye week and he's ready next week. What do you do?
Man, I think the hard thing for me, and this is harking back to discussions on various pods, kind of in summation of that, I said Duffy really needs to kind of hone it in these games, especially because Iowa State was a difficult game, but it's something that we could manage. But this last game certainly was supposed to be the game we were going to get the win and then go into Morgantown next week and supposedly get another win because West Virginia is another one of those teams that people are kind of down on, and for a number of appropriate reasons. But because Duffy did not do well against Kansas, and he had a good game against Iowa State, more or less. I got that flipped. He had a good game against Kansas, not a good game against Iowa State, in my opinion. Duffy's really not giving us a lot of good confidence going forward. And I think a lot of people, myself included, and this would be my answer, I think we need to, if Bowman's healthy and ready 100%, I mean, put him back in the offensive scheme and see if that's what's going to fix this. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I I want to be clear, and I said this in the last podcast. I think Jet Duffy's played admirably the last few weeks. It hasn't been pretty, but it's been impressive. They've done what he's asked. Well, he's done what they've asked him to do, and I think what he's being asked to do is not enough. I don't know if it's a coaching. I think it's a lack of trust in Jet Duffy, because I think he can throw the ball. I mean, he showed us a little bit against Oklahoma State what he can do, but if you don't trust Jet Duffy and this is the way our offense is going to look the next 4 weeks, then yeah, give me Alan Bowman, because I'm done watching this offense.
So here's a kind of an antithesis to that. Bowman obviously has a better arm, and I think Yost proves that with a lot more down the field passing in his first couple of games. But his decision making in UTEP and Arizona, especially, I just don't think that seemed like the same Alan Bowman that we have. What's a good word for that? Heroicized? What is that called? Just made him like the hero of Texas Tech football.
Embellished.
Yeah, like we really embellished him last year. And so his decision making in UTEP and Arizona, I mean, if you guys look back at the highlights, they're not that great. He makes a lot of key mistakes in those games. So the hard, like, this is where the difficult nature of the whole thing comes in, is that we're actually stuck between a rock and a hard place, because even though we've embellished Bowman and just in general, I mean, maybe Duffy statistically is going to be the better quarterback going forward. But and we're stuck with, I think, the coaching is the hardest. It's like the linchpin that either makes this thing work or not. And I think that maybe both quarterbacks can work really well, but maybe it is the coaching that's kind of keeping them from utilizing their own talents and abilities.
I think there's another key component to this, though, and it's the offensive line. And if you wanted to make the argument for Jet Duffy, the argument is this offensive line is so bad that when stuff breaks down, he gives you a better chance to make something out of it. And I think that's important, because this O-line is a crutch, and it's really, it's not getting any better. It's getting worse.
Yeah, it's not getting better. It's hard. And it's hard when you're missing key players like Jack Anderson. Travis Bruffy's not been playing well to his level. Terrence Steele has not looked the same since coming back from injury. It's just like this offensive line that was supposed to be, I mean, by stats, the most experienced line in college football. All the guys playing an accumulative most games out of the entire college football roster. It's just kind of bum. It's been absolute bum. It hasn't helped out our passing game at all. Running game, luckily, running backs are talented enough to make the most out of nothing, especially Sir Roger Thompson in the backfield. But for our passing game, oh man, it's been awful. Been just hard to watch. That's a good way to put that.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. So there's one more piece of this argument that I'd like to address. Our podcast buddies over at the University of Houston, the Scott and Holman podcast, if you're a Houston person, I'd recommend checking out that podcast. They pitched this idea. They asked me, how many games has Bowman played, inferring like, hey, can he get a red shirt? Is that an idea you'd even want to entertain?
Man, I don't know. If we didn't have McIver and we didn't have Morton coming in 2021, I'm not bothered by it. I have a lot more confidence in just the athleticism that we, as far as tape goes, understand about McIver, and certainly with Morton coming in. Like, I'm not beat up about Bowman. It's just with the way I've watched him play in UTEP and Arizona, just like, I'm not beat up about Bowman taking a red shirt or not taking a red shirt. Like, I'd almost rather him not, so that we can shuffle along in the progress and get to the next quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I don't think Texas Tech's of the mindset of the University of Houston right now, where we want to shut it down. Like, we want to see these guys go out and get a couple more wins. Like, we want to see a competitive team next Saturday.
I mean, salvage. I mean, something.
Yeah.
It's West Virginia.
This fan base is turning on Matt Wells. He needs a couple wins coming out of the year.
That's honestly that's a good point. And that's something that I think the fan graphic, which is for anybody who's not aware of what the graphic I posted today, SB Nation does a fan pulse, which is a pulse that, or a pulse. It's a poll decided on by fans, for fans, essentially, to get rid of the whole AP coaches, all of that, and to show kind of where do the fans believe the best teams in college football are. Obviously, Texas Tech never showing up on that, but that's fine. I think what's most pertinent for Texas Tech fans is that confidence, is that confidence image, and it goes, you see it, it's riding high at the beginning. After a loss to Arizona, it's probably the steepest plummet there. And people are like, yo, we're not going to win anything ever again. And against Oklahoma, it was just kind of stagnated going down because that was expected. But then it started to go up. Even in the loss against Baylor, it went up and people saw fight. They loved it. But after that, the game against Iowa State started going down again, and understandably so. The game against I've already put it on my Kansas. I mean, it's just like it's starting to hit a really steep dive. That's hard to come back from. Kansas. It's the joke that we all had against Texas when they lost to Kansas, and that Kansas team. That was nowhere near with this, you know, just the nature of it all. It's just like, Wells, absolutely, you got to get this back on track, man. And I think it starts against West Virginia. And last week I said, you know, hey, the bowl eligibility and like making this a really good season starts against Kansas. I think the narrative has now changed to, hey, you know, salvaging confidence in this team and salvaging your fan base starts against West Virginia.
And it's important that it's against Neil Brown, like a coach that we were probably interested in. So teams of similar talent with coaches from the same breath facing off against each other. So,
right. Okay, my turn. I'll dig from the hat here, go to Twitter, which is always, I love how nasty you guys get on there. Okay. All right, so here we have Anonymous on Twitter asking, in light of the Kansas loss, what is the over-under on transfers at the end of the season commits decommitting before the beginning of next season? Man, I mean, that's, you know, this is like a double-edged sword because I can easily see why after Kansas, especially with the the demoralizing nature, as we'll just continue to call it, of that loss and the way that it happened, you kind of want to say, yeah, like nobody's going to want to play for Texas Tech. Like it's hard enough coming out here and recruiting. And, you know, you thought you had something good going on with the hype around this program, beating Oklahoma State. You can follow that narrative and then you can easily see why people wouldn't want to come here. But I'm going to actually challenge everybody to look towards the real narrative of collegiate athletics. Is that okay? Matt Wells, Coach Yost, Keith Patterson. I mean, these are coaches that go out. These are coaches that visit student athletes in their homes. They talk with their parents. They invest. And from what we understand from people like Baron Mortons, his narrative about, you know, why Texas Tech is that our coaching staff is heavily invested in not just the product that the athlete can, you know, provide to the Texas Tech football team, but to their development as a, you know, human being. And like, that's so much deeper than football. And certainly nobody's looking at Texas Tech and saying, well, you know, this is the end of Texas Tech football. I mean, some of y'all are, but like, this isn't the end of Texas Tech football. It's certainly really hard right now, but over under on transfers. I mean, unless the person's extremely shallow and is not in, you know, collegiate football for the right reasons, I'm going to say that nobody is going to take this as a siren to jump ship. You, Dylan?
I'm not too worried about decommitments. I think you made some really good points about how this staff invests time and like effort into these players and building them as men and not just football players. So I think we've already seen Matt Wells might be a better recruiter than Cliff Kingsbury. And so I'm not worried about decommits. I think the guys that they went after are going to stay put, but I think there could be a fair share of transfers because I think there's some really talented players on this roster that are not getting time. And I really don't want to speculate and put names out there, but there's a running back and a receiver on my list that, man, they're just really talented guys who aren't getting the time that I want for them.
I don't want to dig any deeper because I'd love to know who those people are on your list.
Tazon Henry, Keyshawn Carter.
Okay, here's a question. In what world do you see Tazon Henry, the guy who's been the absolute ambassador for Texas Tech,
like, that's a good point. That's a good point. But I feel like he's gone quiet.
I'm not going to say that's true. Well, I mean, he's tweeted out. I wish I had it right in front of me. He tweeted out after the game that the grind, you know, never stops and everything. It's going to be, it's going to look up, just like stick with this team. So well, he's not.
Well, absent. I hope he doesn't transfer because I think he's a great back. I personally think he's underutilized right now.
That's an absolute
and it
fair
could
assessment.
Be, and it could be health. It could absolutely be health related.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Armand Schein and Tajon Henry both dealing with plenty of injury over the season, giving Sir Roderick Thompson time to shine in his own way. And man, it's proven to be excellent at that position. So it's easy to see going forward. It's just in the natural. If we're talking about the natural flow of college football now, especially of people getting beat out for the starting position and it being obvious that probably not going to win over this guy. So Roderick Thompson's somebody who makes a case for, hey, I want to be RB1 for the duration of this. And he's got the talent. He's got the high ceiling. If any reason Tajon Henry decides to transfer, it's going to be because Sir Roderick's really made himself foundational to, you know, he's become like the pillar for behind. Who is your wide receiver?
Keyshawn Carter.
Okay, that's fair. I could see that.
I think he's more talented than Dalton Rigdon.
Wasn't Keyshawn Carter on scholarship?
Yeah.
From the get-go?
Yeah.
And then Rigdon was a walk-on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just that proof's in the pudding.
Well, I don't know.
But he's not passing to him. Well, the proof's in the pudding. Nobody's, nobody's
eating
the pudding.
He's not taking snaps.
Yeah.
Anyways.
It's hard. Goes back to coaching. All right, Dylan, your turn.
Digging through some of the Twitter replies, one of the constant themes is questioning the coaching hire and then kind of examining the other hires across the Big 12. Are you questioning the hire? Are you looking at some other coaches thinking what could have been?
No. I say no with an asterisk, you know, like no to Matt Wells. I have no quarrel with Coach Wells. I love, and this is an argument that I kind of honed in on as well. I love the people kind of they just go straight ahead and say, I posted a complimentary tweet, duly complimentary tweet to, you know, hey, even though we lost and we deserve to talk about how, you know, poor this team played today, man, just look at what Kansas is doing. And you got to appreciate how they can bring in a guy like Les Miles, who is a national championship caliber coach. I don't care how many championships it takes for you guys to believe that he's a good coach. One is more than we've ever sniffed in the football arena. He's somebody who knows what it's like to play at a higher level and certainly knows how to coach his butt off in key games. And he's been proving that. And if we take the I guess the official statement came out that Texas was given extra seconds in their game. Dylan pointed it out in our Slack duly, understandably. But if we're, you know, if we're accepting that as like, hey, Kansas probably could have beaten Texas there had they not been helped out. This is not the Kansas football team. You have to erase that narrative. And I'm just honing in on Kansas. There's other hires, of course, and Neil Brown and others. Matt Rule's out because he's, you know, couple years already.
Yeah, no, I'm comparing him to like Neil Brown, Les Miles.
And who else?
Isn't there one more? Chris Klieman.
Who
just beat Oklahoma.
That's true. Beat Oklahoma. Had a solid game plan. Offensive wizardry in that game. If you haven't seen the analysis breakdown some plays, you guys got to go watch it. But I guess I'm just kind of I'm stuck with Les Miles and that coaching staff because it's kind of like the most extreme example. I'm not upset with who we have at the helm. I am more upset that Matt Wells felt pressured or inclined or actually trustworthy in people like David Yost to come in and just reproduce the same way he did in, you know, Mormon country for a much lesser conference. I just don't think it was, I'm not mad at David Yost's character. I'm mad at his decision making. Does that make sense?
Let me ask you this. Do you think it was a mistake for Matt Wells to bring his whole staff with him? Like, a lot of people talk about it as a positive because you don't have to teach your guys scheme, but like also, well, yeah, I'll just leave it there. Do you think that was a mistake?
Man, I don't know. I think you can see, I mean, it's so easy to see both sides of the coins on most of these questions, because it's like, yeah, I mean, how simple would it be just to replicate a semi-successful, if people will point to Matt Wells as like average-esque overall record at Utah State, but I really want people to, I encourage you to go dig in to what that looks like, because when he came there, had kind of an okay first year, but by the time his second year came around, he got more people in place where he wanted them. They took off and they had a really great season, and then other teams came out and poached. One most notably took Tom Herman, took Todd Orlando from Matt Wells, who used to be his defensive coordinator, and brought him down to Houston. So after Wells had all his people poached, then all of a sudden they're not good again, but that's because they're having to replace pretty much an entire coaching staff. So I get why Wells wanted to bring the people that he thought were most successful and that he had kind of grown accustomed to. He's very much a family-esque guy. So I get why he brought him on here. But at the same time, this is the Big 12. It's just a different conference with different things that work. The screen pass does not work when you throw it 90% of the time. You can't just wear down teams here. It's just a different level. And ultimately, I think it was kind of, I almost think he should have had more time to think about it, like who he wanted to bring on. I felt like it maybe have been too quick of a decision for him. That makes sense. What do you think?
Yeah. And I think it's fair to look at it a few ways. I think it's right. You bring your guys who know how to run your system and want to do the things that you want to do and know your culture. But there's also an argument to be made that, like, you really need someone with some Big 12 experience. You need someone who's been in this conference who can say, hey, this ain't going to fly here.
Right.
But I think maybe it looks like a mistake now, but you got to trust the process, I feel. And you alluded to it. His first year was okay. But I think once they started recruiting and getting their guys in, which, like I've said, I don't want to say it's safe to say because it's been short, but Matt Wells is going to be a better recruiter than Cliff Kingsbury. That's the difference between these two coaches, I feel.
That's got to already be proved.
Yeah, I mean, because he's got some good guys already first year. And Cliff, if you look at his recruiting classes, they're disappointing, and we all knew that. So I think you just have to trust the process, and once these coaches get their guys in, playing their scheme, that things will pick up. And yeah, there's a lot to be said there, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
So this one comes from Twitter again. It says, that was tough to watch. This may be a rebuilding year, but Tuberville and Kingsbury never lost to Kansas, and they are not improved. Talking about Kansas, they won 2 games out of 7. Now 3 out of 8. Like, he's not wrong. Like, these are all facts, but these are facts put together in a way to try to, I think, diminish where Kansas is now comparatively to where they were in Kingsbury and especially Tuberville's era, and B, certainly tries to downplay Matt Wells's ability as a coach. Dylan, do you want to address maybe why or why not that's a good metric for? Because this is something that's come up in staff conversations, that because we lost to Kansas, we now have to rethink everything. But do you think that, I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment?
This has been heavily talked about in our Slack to a point like ad nauseum. Personally, I believe this Kansas team is better than any Kansas team that we've played in the last 10 years. Like, when's the last time Kansas had a quarterback? Please name the last decent quarterback Kansas had.
Yep. I can't.
Silence. Todd Reesing is the name. I don't know how far back that is.
I think that's early 2000s.
It's reaching. So it's the best Kansas team we've played in a long time. And this, I hate to say it, but might be one of the least talented teams we've had in a long time. And not only that, there's a scheme change. There's a lack of depth. The O-line's terrible. And the secondary is reeling. So, like, there's a lot of problems. So, you know, we lost to Kansas. Like, it's a tough pill to swallow, but, you know, it's just where we're at right now. And I think abandoning this team and coaching staff right now because the last two were able to beat a worse Kansas team is wrong.
Yeah, I'm tired of the. It's like this. That's what's comfortable. I think like that's what's comfortable for people is to say, you know, we're not the worst because there's always Kansas. But when the reality is changing, people get really uncomfortable because now we lost to Kansas, and all they've been saying their whole lives is that Kansas is the worst at football. And now we lost to Kansas. So that's probably a really hard pill for people to swallow, but it's kind of on them, because if you're not watching, if you're not paying attention to anybody but Texas Tech, you just don't have a bigger picture. If you're not watching Kansas recruit Les Miles and Les Miles coming in saying like, hey, I'm going to make it happen,
And then Kansas stole a handful of our recruits.
And then Kansas steals a handful of recruits. If you're not seeing that happen, you don't have the bigger picture. If you don't see Kansas take Emmett Jones, noted wide receiver coach who coached people like Antoine Wesley, like TJ Vasher, and a host of others, you're not paying attention. I mean, Dylan, what did Kansas beat us all night with?
One receiver roasted us.
The deep ball again and again and again. And I mean, if you got paying attention, that's Emmett Jones, that's his coaching. He's an excellent wide receiver coach that just puts like, oh my gosh, and it's obvious.
And he's one of the best guys to recruit the Dallas area.
Absolutely, hands roots everywhere. So if you don't see that happening, you're not paying attention. If you don't see Kansas firing their offensive coordinator after the Oklahoma 45-20 game and then coming out against Texas and putting up, you know, 500 plus yards against Texas, now albeit a bad defense, but 500 plus yards, you're not paying attention. I mean, this is a team that's just completely fundamentally and then everything in between different. It's just like you said, Carter Stanley is a good quarterback. It's not like, oh, he's like Pat Mahomes, awesome. But like, you know, this is a good quarterback behind great coaching. And with that at home, with a guy who has been in a number of scenarios where he's been down and come back to win, especially in a tough conference like the SEC, I mean, you can't let your foot off the gas. And that's what we did. And you can't be surprised that Kansas took advantage of that, you know?
Yeah, and that's the reality. We lost to Kansas, but I still don't. It's too early to jump ship. Like, you just have to have a little faith and patience, and it's probably not what people want to hear right now. But
no, not at all.
But Cliff Kingsbury. He had a good first season, but both Tadlock and Beard didn't have great seasons as their coach, as their first year as the coach in Lubbock. And if you don't have faith in Matt Wells anymore, put some faith in Kirby Hocutt.
I think that's something else we need to address, is that people calling for, you know, Hocutt to I've seen calls to resign, which that's the most obnoxious. Like, that's never happening. Since he just signed his new thing, it calls to, you know, fire Wells, or, you know, your character, like, this was a crappy hire, blah blah blah. And no faith in Hocutt. And how do we get from the Final Four this same year in the national championship game, praising the man, giving him extension, and we don't make it 6 months. And all of a sudden we're saying, nope, that was a bad hire, you're a bad AD. Like, how does that happen?
It's classic Texas Tech just not giving a crap about anything but football. But like, guys, open your eyes, look around. Every single other program is killing it. We could rattle off every single one of them.
Yep. truly an opportunity for Texas Tech fans to grow in character and just kind of see past football. Not that we need to excuse football, let them be bad, kind of the way Kansas did for such a long time. But, you know, give it some grace. Give them some time. This is a new coach, a whole new conference. I mean, come on, people. Don't be so impatient that you put us in a spiral of poor coaching carousels, and you don't want that. You don't want that. So it's almost easier just to kind of stay the course, and you can grumble, but like, staying the course and just letting Wells build the build the team that he wants to build. All right, you got another one, Dylan?
This was something interesting that was brought up on Facebook, and it was about curbing your enthusiasm for the rest of the season. And I think it's something worth talking about, and it's something Albie and I have talked about before. Do you think we should curb our enthusiasm for the rest of the season? And do you think it was a mistake for Kirby Hokut to come out and say we're going to be elite and for Matt Wells to say we're not rebuilding, we're reloading?
I'm going to read the comment in full just so everybody has a general context. It says that I've decided to curb my enthusiasm for football until October 2021. So this person is obviously very invested in Baron Morton. I'll watch games for sure, just with zero expectations of success. I've been a diehard fan and a trash talker on behalf of Tech for years. Thank you for your service. But I just can't give them the benefit of the doubt anymore. Coaches, players, staff have to prove to this fan base that our program is worth believing in again. I think that's only fair. So here's to hope they get cracking. Crack on, as the British say. With that, with the content of that entire like message in its entirety, I get that. I'm not opposed to that.
I think that's one of the more rational takes on any of the social media replies that we've gotten.
Honestly.
Like, that's it right there. Curb your enthusiasm. It's ridiculous to have the expectations that Tech fans have for football, especially like this year with the first-year head coach. So
you want to talk about enthusiasm. You want to talk about unmet expectations. Think about when Jimbo Fisher came to A&M and they erected the trophy with the plaque on it that says, you know, national championships 20 blank blank. Talk about unmet expectations. Like, I don't know what their timetable on that was, obviously within this century, but you know, how do you put that on a guy? And I'm not saying that Hokut did something similar, because he didn't. All Hokut said was that we will be elite again. Obviously peering back to our, you know, blip of success in 2008, and let that be a reminder that Texas Tech is not this perennial program, people. I don't know where a lot of these inflated expectations are coming from. I understand being enthusiastic about the possibility, but there's a lot of people who have inflated expectations, and that comes from like one season pretty much. And, you know, one season in the top 10, and we all of a sudden think that should be our reality forever. It's not. It just isn't. We had a lot. We had a dream team. So I don't think that Hokut is wrong saying that we will be elite again. I think that people mistook that as, oh my God, we're going to be elite next year. And Matt Wells certainly didn't help himself by saying, we're not rebuilding, we're reloading. Because that's difficult verbiage in general, I believe. Because, you know, what is rebuilding versus what is reloading? How can you reload if you've changed the entire weapon? You know, we changed coaching staff. We changed schemes. It's got to be a rebuild. There's no way it can be a reload. So I have nothing against with what Hoka said. I love his foresight and his decision making. People want to say, you know, well, why didn't we hire Les? Well, why didn't we hire this person? Well, why didn't we hire this person? And they were all, you know, kind of star names with short-term potential for Texas Tech. And I imagine that Hokut made this decision with a longevity in mind. So, yeah, we will be elite again when, asterisk, Matt Wells gets the people, gets the athletes here that he wants, and this is fully his team. And then he'll have the ability to show the nation, really, at this point, you know, how good he can be. I think that's where the mix-up is, you know?
I like the point you made, because honestly, I was the person, when we were on the line to firing Cliff Kingsbury, I was looking at Les Miles. I was like, yo, Les Miles, like, that's a game-changing hire. And of course, Kansas moved a lot quicker than we did, and that was done and buried before we even had the chance, but if you look at it, if Kansas has a really good year next year, you think Les is staying in Kansas? And so that's something you said, is we made the long-term hire. Matt Wells isn't jumping ship to the next big offer the second Tech has a winning season. You know, like, Matt Wells is here. He's here for the long haul. He's Oklahoma. He's West Texas kid.
Yeah. And I think that if ever anybody wants to try to dispute that, you know, look at his other hires outside of Candy Whitaker. You know, look, outside of that, you have Chris Beard, who after a season has already been kind of sniffed around by top programs, especially by Texas, you know, supposedly. I don't know how confirmed it was, but, you know, Texas boosters.
You know UCLA yeah. called.
You got UCLA. You got Texas, which is a team that he coached at. Or he, you know, he went to UT. So definitely his alma mater. It, when a man rejects his own alma mater, that's somebody, and you can see, like, this was Hocutt's plan. I mean, you have people that want to be here for the duration. He wants, like, he wants Bill Snyder's. He wants people to stay here and to create a level of success that is sustainable, not, hey, you had a really good season because you're just an excellent coach and yeah. And then Alabama came and poached you to be whatever, or, you know, this team poached you. UCLA poached you. It's just, he's a great, I think we can't underestimate how great an athletic director Hocutt is in every kind of every facet of his job. He's such a complete thinker when it comes to making decisions that I don't want to start doubting him now just because we've had a dissatisfactory first season of a coach coming up from a much lesser conference and taking over with a team that has a myriad of, you know, people from coaching eras. It's just like, the first year, let's curb our enthusiasm. We should have walked into this being, you know what? Whatever happens, man, just let it happen. But instead, I think Tech fans have built all of their stress and frustration since Leach's firing and have culminated it to, like, we better be good next season or I'm going to flip my lid. Like, I don't, whoever comes in better win 10 games or I'm going to lose it. They should be fired. We've got this, like, Alabama level mentality that we never should have even culminated, you know?
Yeah, it's, and I think we were kind of guilty of it on the podcast. I think I saw 7 or 8 wins on the schedule at the beginning of the year, but, you know, it's, I was probably a little unreasonable then too, but yeah, it's time to curb your enthusiasm. It's a great quote. It's a great TV show too, if you haven't watched it.
Yeah, I love it. Yep. Okay, and we'll wrap up with one more, and this actually comes from the blog site, which I'm just going to say, if you guys have the grit and gumption to comment on blog sites anymore, kudos to you. But these tend to be pretty in-depth, so I'm saying from one of them says, close losses, dumb plays, and poor execution. Not that the man walks on water, but this team is Bowman's team. Just like last year, we win with Bowman and we lose without him. There is talent and desire and hunger to win, but lots of poor execution and heartbreaking losses that really test this team. It's too bad the defense still cannot keep the other teams from scoring points late in the game after being given a nice lead. We're closer than we think, but just seems to be left at the altar before we can win. Oh, I'm not going to finish that because it gets kind of nasty. Consummated. I finished it. God, why, man? It was an okay comment till you said that. Guns way up. Bowman, come back soon. There's a lot to decompress from this. I just want to say from the get-go, if you think we lose without Bowman, how do you explain Oklahoma State? Because this is an Oklahoma State team that is not bad. Spencer Sanders is way all over the board, but as a whole, they're not that bad. So how do you rectify we lose without Bowman with Jet Duffy's nationally recognized performance against Oklahoma State? I think that's just immediately, that just deflates that part of the argument. So let's look at the other ones, unless there's something you want to say. Let's look at the other ones. You know, we have poor execution, so we can talk about coaching staff. And then our defense can't keep the other teams from scoring after we have a nice lead. What do you think?
Our defense was good up until 2 weeks ago. Our defense was playing really good. And if you look at the numbers in the conference by the season, our defense is about middle of the road. Like, obviously it's declining in the last 2 weeks, but it's been playing well. It's tough to point the finger at what the problem is on offense. And I, like I've said before, it's not Jet Duffy, but a stat that jumps out at me that, and again, I don't think it's a Jet Duffy problem, but we're second in the conference in first downs at 26 a game. And then we're, second to last on third down conversions, only converting 38% on third down. So one out of every three tries on third down do we convert. And that's just, it's just not sustainable. And maybe the answer is Alan Bowman. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, I think we addressed that at the beginning. I think it's appropriate when Alan's healthy and ready to play, and it's worthy of noting that he was practicing, he was warming up without a sling last game, and he looked pretty well. I'm assuming he's going to be ready to go at West Virginia because he has this bye week to recover and kind of do some last-minute physical therapy checks, but you got to throw him back in the mix. Not that Duffy's not, but if they trust Bowman more, I mean, you got to throw him back in.
If Bowman can consummate a third down conversion, I'm all about it.
Oh, man. Hey, first quarterback to get a third down conversion as the starter for the rest of the year. Why not? Just happen. We're going to curb our enthusiasm here. Who gives a hell about whatever anymore? Let's just go out and have fun, right? I mean,
I just hope both teams have fun.
I just hope they go out there and have fun until we play Texas, and then I hope we, you know, smear them across the field. But until then, you know, West Virginia, we just want to have fun, man. Kansas State, after your game against Oklahoma, I hope we just have fun.
Hey, we're having fun early, too. Prime time, 11 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this year we've been pretty good at 11 a.m. for the most part, so why not keep it going, at least averagely? Yeah, I don't think – just defensively, I think we've been playing well. I think that it's just on a decline right now for some reason. You can look at injuries.
It's attrition.
It's absolute attrition.
And depth.
The depth on the defensive backs kill us. We have nobody at depth. Adrian Fry should have never been moved to safety.
Yeah. Well, and that explains why it's getting worse every week, too. Like, depth.
Well, do you think this bye week is going to give them a good opportunity to bounce back just defensively? Like,
you know, I think a lot of guys could get healthy this week. You know, give the guys rest. I think that's what this team needs is rest.
Who's your one guy that just needs to take a break?
It's Adrian Fry. You mentioned it. Like, he was supposed to be, it was like him and Jordan Brooks coming in the year. It's like, those are our dudes on defense. And Adrian Fry, part of it's been health. And he was wearing a club on his hand in the last game. But like, I don't know if it's the position change, but the dude's not right. And we need him too. We need him.
Right. I think I'm going to go ahead and pick Rico Jeffers, somebody who can't seem to stay out of injury's way. I feel like in the last three games that he's played, he's gone down with injury, whether the length of that or not. But like, dude, just needs a break. Just needs to just take a beat, honestly. So big time for people like Douglas Coleman and Jordan Brooks to step up for this defense. Even on our defensive line has been pretty good overall. I'll say overall in regards to like just keeping up pressure on the quarterback when they can, because there's some disappointing moments. But I don't know if the oh, good grief. I think the bye week's going to be good for us. It can't be any worse, right? The only thing bad about a bye week is that we don't have anything to prove against the doubters. So we'll have to sit in the commentary of you guys some more. But outside of that, I think this is a good opportunity for them just to rest up, man. Get right. West Virginia is another game that we should be winning based on if West Virginia's situation is actually worse than ours. But we could just as easily walk into Morgantown and lose this game. Like, it's this team is so back and forth, and it's another road game. We haven't won a single road game yet, which is incredibly crappy. Like, it just needs to – we need to take a beat and get right before this next game, because the second half of our schedule got a lot tougher than we thought it would be with Kansas State.
Yeah, yeah. It's still lighter, I think, than the front half of our schedule.
Oh, by far, yeah.
But West Virginia should be a good game to get right. You're coming off a bye. You're going to be healthy. You're going to have an extra week to game plan for the worst quarterback in the Big 12, Austin Kendall.
Yeah. Or if he plays us, he becomes the best quarterback in the Big 12.
Carter Stanley's good. Albie doesn't believe me. Carter Stanley's a good quarterback.
Carter Stanley is a good quarterback. Albert, get over it. He's a good quarterback statistically. He makes good choices. He makes Kansas look like they can play ball. He gave Kansas a Big 12 win. These are stats you cannot refute. Get over it. Man, that's it. I can't read these more. I can't read more of these.
Can we talk about one last thing?
Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap it up.
One last thing. And it's the ultimate reason why every coaching staff has been doomed for the last decade. The pirate curse. Do you buy it?
I don't buy it. I don't buy animism in any shape or form, just because when you buy, so like the belief that there's a curse or something like that, luck is animistic. I just can't believe in that stuff, because when I do, it never pays me dividends. Like anytime I'm like, you know, I'm going to wear my socks forever, or like I'm going to do this, that never has any effect on the teams I like. So I cannot believe that, like, the inability to pay, if we paid Leach, it would all be better. Like, there's no way I can justify that to myself. So I don't know. Do you?
I think a great explanation for football since 2008 is Mike Leach. It's a great explanation. It's nonsense. Pay the captain. Pay the damn man.
I mean, I'm all for justice and, like, you know, doing the right thing and paying him. He deserves his money. I do not think that was going to help us win. All right, is that what you're saying?
I'd say it's worth a shot. We're going to do the right thing and pay him. I just love Mike Leach
and
so much.
I don't know. If we start winning after we pay him, then you know what? Curse is lifted. But if not, we're not going to say that we thought it was going to work in the first place. We were just doing it for the right reasons.
Win-win. How could you go wrong?
Win-win. Yeah. Win-win. And hopefully win-win-win-win if we ever do that and we can get back to the top 10 where we Texas Tech officially belongs as a perennial top 10 football program as far as most of you are concerned, I think. So that's going to be it for us tonight. Thank you, everybody, for not participating and forcing us to dumpster dive through the comments and Twitter and Facebook, really the most toxic places on the earth, but not as toxic as YouTube comments. Remember, never go surfing down YouTube comment sections. It's a death trap. Dylan, thanks for hanging out with me tonight, going over the good, the bad, and the extremely ugly and weird of Texas Tech fans.
Mostly ugly.
I hope that going forward, everybody can kind of, you know, take a breath, take a pause, realize that, hey, there's hope going forward. There's plenty of years on Wells' contract. It's not going to change just because you're pissed off that we lost to Kansas. Kansas is a new team. Is there any other big bullet points I'm missing here?
No, but I'm buying that one. I know a lot of people don't. They're like, it's Kansas, but I 100% buy that one. Kansas is a new team.
Kansas is a new and refreshed team ready to make a bid at the mid of the Big 12. That was a good little rhyme. Have patience. We're going forward. If you really just hate it that much, just basketball season starting up in 6 days, 5 days, depending on when you listen to this. Everything's going to be all right, guys. We're really good at every other single sport. So, you know what? Get over it. For Dylan, for myself, this has been the Air Raid Podcast recap of Texas Tech's disgruntled fans. Stay wrecked, people.